Hello and welcome to another edition of the Tigers Down Under. I'm your host, Alex, and with me I have Mike. How are you, Mike?
Hey, yeah, I'm doing well. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. Slightly different surrounds for me today. Just moving around the place a little bit, so I've got a different background, which always keeps things fresh. But we'll start things off with that Sunderland game, which is a little while ago now, so a bit hard to cast our minds back too far to talk about it. But, you know, quite a good result, and one that we really needed at the time and kind of set us on our way heading into this sort of flurry of activity to end the transfer window.
Yeah, I think very important result. We were four games in a row without a win, you know, two losses in a row, I think. And of all teams to come up against, it was Sunderland, who we had lost 2-1-0 a few games before that. So I think it was really important for us to at least get some points, and a win was, I mean, more than I probably would have asked for before the game.
Yeah, it seemed as if it was one of those games where we were sort of down to the bare bones in terms of personnel and availabilities. And in some ways, it sort of, you know, takes you back to your roots, or I don't know what sort of phrase you want to use. But when you look at the players that we had out there in Doherty and Slater and Coyle, it was very much that League One core that got us up, that, you know, I guess that hard-fought, gritty determination that kind of got us over the line.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it definitely did help, especially towards maybe the last 20 of that game while we're holding on. It felt like that League One team. I mean, you look at the bench and we have Vaughan, Ashby, Zelis Fleming. Like, it's a very, very young bench, and it was nice to kind of have Ashby in and around the lads again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I say that it was that League One quality, but of course it was a bit of Premier League quality, sort of born and bred in Liverpool, that got us over the line in some senses, with Morton supplying the assist for Cavallio's winner. Took a healthy deflection as well, but the connection he makes with that volley, finding the back of the net, was a superb moment for us.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't ask about the corner.
I was going to mention
I think when it happened, I had said to the boys when we were watching that keepers are way too protected. And I'm a firm believer in that. And I think Sharp's done what Sharp does as a striker. He's just made himself annoying. If I were a Sunderland fan, I'd be annoyed. I think if it had happened to us, we would have seen it as a foul. But I'm going to say that it's not. So I was pretty happy with it. Whether it's actually a corner or not, I think that's a different story. I
look at it as not as sort of almost karmic retribution for Connolly getting taken out by Gunn the previous week, where the keeper was overprotected, that we've kind of got a bit of underprotection for the keeper this time around.
I mean, it's the same conversation. Like, is that a red card? Hey, he's got the ball. Yeah. He's a keeper. Like, he's done what he needs to do. I mean, Connolly's been completely flattened and then concussed. So if anything, I would have liked to have seen like a retrospective red, even though that's not not to our benefit. But I definitely see what you mean by retribution. I think the goal itself, it's great to see Mawson and Carvalho linking up, like I'm sure that they have done in youth. But it was a great ball in, I think, on his weaker foot as well. A good connection.
Yeah, and I guess the other one to call out, sort of touched on him before, but Louis Coyle, absolute gun and warrior in our defence. It's interesting you sort of mentioned Ashby before, and I've seen that comparison made to Ian Ashby, just in terms of, I suppose, his persona and his influence around the club, and even more on the field in terms of, you know, stepping up from League One with us and people sort of writing him off in terms of being able to make that step up. And he saw off that challenge from Christie, and he's sort of won his way back into the side, and is really sort of stepping up as our captain.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that game of all games, I mean, Clark's been one of the most dangerous wingers in the league, and Coyle had him in his pocket the whole game, bar like one or two like beautiful crosses or like nifty footwork from Clark. Like, it was nowhere near as influential in that game as he was in the repeat fixture beforehand. I think that really helped us kind of stay on track for the 3 points.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. And that's reflected in my votes for this game. I gave Coyle the 3. Doherty, I gave the 2 as another one to mention. And he really helped Coyle down that right-hand side in keeping Clark quiet. Picked up, you know, a lot of our players picked up cards early in this one as well, sort of, I guess, reflecting maybe a bit of maturity after, well, I don't know if you call it maturity, but it may be street knowledge or experience after that Norwich game to be a bit more crafty when needed, breaking down those Sunderland runs and plays. But yeah, Doherty for the 2 for me. Cavalier for the 1, scoring the winner always is going to get you in the votes in my books and looked pretty sharp around the ground as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you mentioned the cards. I think we had 5 yellow cards in the first half, 2 in the second. We had 7 yellow cards in that game, which is absurd. My 3 was similar, but I swapped out Doherty for Morton for the 2.
Nice one.
3, Morton 2, Cavalier 1.
Nice one indeed. Well, we'll move on. You know, the game was about 2 weeks ago, so I guess more pressing issues to discuss in terms of off-field news as we come closer to the end of the transfer window. Hard to remember. When we sort of talked about it in the chat today, it's hard to imagine that, you know, Ivor Pandor, who joined us, I think it was announced on the Saturday, so the day after the Sunderland game, coming in for about 1.2, 1.3 million from Fortuna Sittard. We'll talk, I guess, more in that Millwall game potentially about how we're looking to line up with all these new recruits. But of course, Ryan Giles announced overnight last night as well, left back signed from Luton, and Noah Ohio signed on loan from Standard Liège as a striker, very much in the mould of Delap, or so we're told. All look promising additions. I mean, we've talked the last few weeks that, you know, getting a striker in of some sort would be good just to see a bit more depth and competition. Don't know what he'll produce, but all sort of promising signings.
Yeah, I think of all the transfer periods, of all the seasons in maybe the last like 5 or 6, I think this probably has been one of, if not the best, that I think we've seen. You mentioned Panda. He started a few games. I think he played a few games for the under-21s international team, which is great. Giles, I think everyone's been saying this is probably one of the better signings of the season. I think people even outside of Hull have recognised that that's a pretty huge signing. And with the option to buy it as well is great rather than an obligation. I mean, he had 11 assists for Middlesbrough in the Championship. He had 9 assists for Cardiff. Like, yeah, bear in mind, he's not scoring. That's not his job. I think we're really lacking that creative instinct from fullbacks. And I think if he comes in and hits the ground running like he did for Borough and Cardiff, I think you said it, all we need is Ohio to stand there and put it in the back.
Basically. Yeah.
And like, speaking of Ohio, like, he had 5 goals last season. He hasn't got any this season in the league, but he has scored in the cup and in friendlies, and 5 and 6 for the under-21 national team. So he knows where the goal is, and it's just, I think, about being fed. I think the people that we've got on the team, you know, we've got Philo, Giles, Tufan behind him, Carvalho, all capable of finding a striker. And while we've got Delap out, it'll be nice to have Ohio sharp. I think Carvalho can also play up front. So I think we've got a lot more options now than we maybe did a week ago.
Yeah, and of course, Connolly coming back in just a couple of weeks as well, and Billy Sharp, I don't know if we're looking to use him from the start in games or just use him, I guess, like we did against Sunderland, but we've certainly got options and different sorts of strikers as well, which I think is a big appeal because it means we can, you know, whether you even push a high onto a wing like we used to with Delap and things like that as well, we can sort of change our shape as needed depending on who we're coming up against, which will be really good to see as well. Yeah, Giles for me, you know, it's up there with the Philogene signing in the summer for me, assuming we'd get him in on a permanent next summer, where he's one of the most highly rated left-backs in the division. I know when Forrest went up, I think there was some talk they were going to try and get him from Borough. And then, of course, Luton got him as well. So he's been pretty highly rated for a while now. So to get him in on essentially on a permanent, I mean, I can't imagine the scenario where we don't sign him permanently. Like, it'd have to go pretty horribly wrong for that to be the case. But you're sort of looking at the side now and seeing some pretty good building blocks there for if we don't go up this season, at least, there for a pretty strong tilt at it next season.
Yeah, I haven't thought about the prospects of not going, like, not making it to the playoffs at least. because when I think about it, part of me is, are these players going to want to hang around and go through another season? Because a lot of these players are on loan. And I did see one comment on a post somewhere, you know, everyone loves to put their opinion in saying that we're wasting our time with these loans because they don't mean anything in the long term. I think it's actually the opposite. I think looking at the caliber of players that are coming to Hull, and even it be on loan, the fact that they want to come here, and it's a genuine club that they see is like challenging for the playoffs, is already a step forward in the club. There's the caliber of Philo, of Carvalho, Morton, Delap, like that's insane. Those are in the next 2 to 3 years probably Premier League starters.
Yeah.
Coming to a club like Hull and believing in Rosie and the city, it's awesome.
And I think, you know, we sort of, no disrespect to the players in question, but we sort of joked in the chat today about, you look at guys like Ryan Woods and Ryan Longman, even Xavier Simons out on loan in League One as well, where the club is just progressing at such a rate that these guys, unfortunately, they're getting left behind. But it also just shows where we were 12 months ago, 18 months ago, when you look at guys like Liam Walsh coming in on loan from Swansea versus Carvalho coming in from Liverpool. And as you say, it's not just about potentially trying to sign a Morton in the summer, as great as that would be. It's not about, it's a waste of time developing this guy for Liverpool. It's developing that relationship with Liverpool so that the next Morton that comes through will also get sent our way. And maybe it's a case that the next one that comes along, when we get promoted, we are actually able to sign them permanently. And it's that reputation. And at the end of the day as well, like, as much as we're developing players for Liverpool, these players are coming in and pushing us up the table. Like, you look at the goals that Delap scored for us and the sort of the enhanced reputation that we're getting as a result of that. It's a two-way relationship.
Yeah, hopefully one that continues with some of these clubs. I mean, you can see Liverpool have sent two players over. What's to say they stop? Like, they send other players next year or the year after. The only thing I want to see more of is us loaning out our youngsters, like Vaughan, Ashby, getting them actual game time so that they can be around the first starting 11, I guess, around the first team. I think this window would have been a great window to put Vaughan into another club on loan for at least the rest of the season if we're bringing in a new winger, which we supposedly are.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk potential outgoings and then we'll talk about those potential incomings, because we have seen that Ali, Sinic, Lekilo, even Ingram are potentially heading out either on loans or permanents. I think they're trying to look at getting that Ali deal to be a permanent deal instead of a loan. But then, as you say there, it'll be interesting to see if Vaughan and others also head out on loan for their development, because I think we saw Jarvis head back out to Shelbourne overnight as well in the Island League, which I was a little surprised about, because I thought after the way that relationship ended for Ajun, he might not help them out. But, you know, fair play to him. He's still happy to send players there. So it is interesting. I do feel like I look at like a Xavier Simons, where you go, if we were smarter about it, smart is maybe the wrong word, but he should be someone that we bought from Chelsea. It's not necessarily going to work out with us, but we should be able to find a club where he can then go and excel, and either we sell to that club or he at least enhances his profile to get a return on him for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting to see. I think there'll be a bit of movement in and out still to come before the window closes.
Vinagre had already made his debut for Verona.
Yeah, I saw that. I think he only came on for like the last 5 minutes. I saw some people getting a bit worked up that, you know, he was fit enough to start we'll play for them, but not for us. But I think he only played about 5 minutes. So it'll be interesting to see how that one goes for him. Of course, he went back so Giles could come in. Yeah, Abdulkadir Ömer is on his way for a medical as we speak. I think we saw a video of him at the Turkish airport yesterday. So that's, I suppose, 100% happening in the sense that he's coming over for a medical. I suppose we just wait and see if terms and all that sort of thing are ticked off and signed. I think I was saying to you, I reckon that one could go to deadline day just because work permits and everything like that seem to drag on a little bit with these internationals. So, look, he looks an interesting prospect. Potentially £4 million fee seems like a lot, but
I I think I said this before. I'm just hesitant with all those types of transfers, especially given the way that Ali and Cynic turned out.
I was just going to say, don't call me a cynic, but
yeah, it's I don't know. It's I've said it to you. I'm happy to be proven wrong. I want to be proven wrong, but I'm not holding that transfer in the same esteem as the other ones we've made, like Panda, Giles, Ohio, even Ohio. Like, I would prefer to have Ohio than have Omur, mainly because of the league and our history with taking in Turkish players to Fanaside.
Yeah, and that's where I'm sort of like, I'm happy to start with that low base of zero expectations and look if he comes in and scores a goal on debut, then I can just be thrilled.
Well, because I think when Ali was coming in, there was all this hype saying he's the Iranian Messi, or he was like tearing up the Turkish league, and then he didn't have any impact.
Yeah.
But I mean, I still love him. Whenever he comes on, I love it, even though it's useless. But I'm hoping that this transfer is a bit different. I'm hoping that at least we've seen, like, okay, maybe we made a mistake with Cynic and Ali. What do we do wrong? And then what are we looking at? And I'm hoping that's the way that Rosie and the transfer team have looked at the Omer transfer.
Yeah, I can't help but think with some of these that it's almost a case of, as Jun's saying, I want to bring a Turkish player in, find a spot in the side for him, but, like, you know, he's almost like a bonus player that Resenia's just got if he wants him. And so Ajun's just sort of saying, you know, because remember when he first came in, Ajun was saying he wanted to fill the side with Turkish players and
everyone lost their heads a bit. And that's fine if he's paying the $4 million out of his pocket and not the club's pocket.
Yeah.
I would rather spend that $4 million towards a permanent for Dalat or for Giles or for someone rather than Ajun being happy that there's another Turkish player in the club. And I'm sure that's not his intention. And I'm sure this guy is quality, but can he do it in the championship? I think that the hardest thing is trying to figure out if a player that hasn't played in England or in the championship can do it. I mean, that's why we're so confident in Giles, because he's done it.
Yeah.
He's proven for multiple seasons that he can crack it at the top of the championship. I think that's why it's so exciting. Same with Carvalho. Like, these are proven English football players. So I think that's why I'm probably a bit more like skeptical for the Omer signing.
Yeah. There's been some debate whether it's a permanent or a loan with an option as well. Hopefully it is the latter, because I think, if anything, hopefully we've learned our lesson a bit from the Cynic and Ali. I mean, Ali was initially a loan, but the Cynic transfer where we spent a lot of money and then didn't get a lot of output, where if they were on loan initially, then at least you've got a bit of a decision to make at the end of the season, rather than you've paid the $4 million and you're kind of stuck with them. And, you know, it's a lot harder to offload them then, because the wages that you're paying in England and everything like that makes it a lot harder for those European clubs to take on that liability. But that'll be an interesting one. And then, of course, we're also linked with an unnamed domestic winger, I think is what Baz Cooper has said. Although I did see today sort of a clarification that there's something like four, I think there's five wingers we're looking at, four of who are domestic. So I don't know if that means that the number one preference is potentially wavering and we're widening the net, or, we're sort of just keeping it shrouded in mystery. But you're starting to think, you know, you bring in another player as well, then suddenly guys like Toufan, Traore, Slater aren't getting in that side. It's becoming quite a stacked front line.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about, you know, Millwall and starting 11, and I was having a think, and Seri and Traore didn't even cross my mind because they've been away for the Cup of Nations, but I don't even know where I put them. Maybe I would swap Slater for Seri, but you're right. I think, and I was saying this to you beforehand, I would just like some names of who we're looking at being thrown out. I mean, you say Baz has said it's local. Baz also didn't know we were going to sign a striker. Like, we had to find out from what was it?
Romano,
right? Romano is the one that told us that we're signing a striker, not Baz. So I don't know why this transfer specifically is so secretive. I'm hoping it's a case of this is a really, really good quality player and we don't want anything out there saying that we're approaching them. We've got 2 days.
Yeah.
Matt, like, maybe a day and a half, actually. I don't even think it's 2 days. So we're going to know by Friday morning our time I think that's when the window ends. So then, look, I'm hoping it's great, but yeah, I think it goes back to the conversation of, well, what do we do with the rest of our team? Because there's going to be a lot of players there that want to play, and there's no room for them in an 11, let alone maybe even an 18. And those are the players that I would want to see go on loan. But at the same time, I understand that if someone gets injured, it's good to have those players.
It's tough. Yeah.
It's a problem. It's a problem. It's a good problem to have. And it's a great problem that we don't need to fix.
That's it.
We're going to sit there at 2 a.m. every Sunday morning and just watch Hull do its thing. And then Rosie can deal with the decisions of where we put our players.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll talk then about that Millwall game. Well, actually, before we talk Millwall, just very quickly, I know we just mentioned their names, but Seri and Traore both getting through to the quarters and actually coming up against each other is awesome to see. Seri getting his first start for the tournament, playing the 120 minutes, getting man of the match. And I think Traore also started for Mali this morning. So both of them getting, I think, their first minutes of the tournament and now coming up against each other will be pretty cool. I don't know what time the game is, but I'd be pretty tempted to tune in if they're both starting that one.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's good to see that they're playing, because I think in the first few games they hadn't made appearances off the bench or not at all.
No, I don't think they played at all, yeah.
No, so I think it was great to see, and it was, I mean, amazing to see Seri getting out of the match. And I wonder who we support now in the next match. Let's hope it goes all the way down to Pens.
I actually have an Ivory Coast shirt, which I got years and years ago because my mates and I played like a FIFA tournament and I played as Ivory Coast. So I found like a $20 shirt from Rebel Sports or something. So I think I've got to go for Ivory Coast just on that basis.
I don't think you have a choice.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Okay, well, we'll talk Millwall then coming up this weekend. Because we had that week off in between with the FA Cup fourth round, we have had the benefit of basically like a miniature break. And it's a bit wild to think that, you know, we've just talked about that Sunderland game and how thin we were, to suddenly think we've got so many new players that could be coming into the 11 for this one. Millwall, managed by Joe Edwards, who took over after Rowett left in October. I think he was a former assistant of Frank Lampard, I want to say, and I think he's been involved in the England setup as well. I think he's kind of gotten a mixed start with Millwall, but I think they've got two wins in their last five, but no wins in their last three. But in saying that, they've brought some really good players in this window as well. Like, you look at Tanganga coming in from Spurs, and, I mean, he was a reasonably regular starter for Spurs under Mourinho, for example, and Obafemi, who had a pretty decent spell with Swansea before joining Burnley as well. So they've made some pretty astute additions this window as well, and will be a pretty stern test.
Yeah, it's not going to be an easy game. I mean, you mentioned that they have two wins in their last five and none in their last three, but they did have a three-game win streak against Bristol, Norwich and QPR, albeit they then lost to QPR. But they only lost to Leicester 3-2, which is a pretty decent result given it's Leicester. They're kind of walking through the league, other than the fact we also beat them. So it's not going to be easy, and my score prediction doesn't reflect that. I still think, you know, I'll get to that. But I think it'll be a really good test for the new players that have come in. I don't think we're going to start necessarily anyone new other than maybe Giles, just because he has been playing a fair amount. But other than that, I think it'll be really good to see some appearances off the bench from our new signings.
Yeah, well, maybe on that topic then, sort of the biggest question for this game is what we think that starting 11 looks like. I'd find it understandable but also incredibly harsh if Allsopp has dropped. I think Allsopp probably retains his spot for this game after a clean sheet against Sunderland and a pretty decent all-round performance. I think you're right. I think Giles is probably the one to come in at left-back if any of those new signings. And then, of course, Fela Jane coming back in on that left wing as well. But other than that, I think you're probably looking at, because what Lekilo started against Sunderland and Jacob started against Sunderland, so it's probably those two that drop out. And maybe Doherty drops out as well, but I'm trying to think who would come in for him.
I think our 11 last game we had Slater on the wing. So if we put, why don't we Doherty on the wing? So if we put, I don't like Tufan up front. I'm going to be the first to say it, and I'll back that. I don't like him up front, so I would much rather have him in the mid. So if we play, either Carvalho up front, or if we put Sharp up front and then Carvalho on the right, then for me that probably makes a bit more sense. But I think you're right. Philo and Giles probably be the two that come in 100% to start, at least for me. Panda, I don't know. I wouldn't mind seeing him come in. But yeah, I think it's tough to take that away from also. But unfortunately, the keeper game is a really tough game.
I think it's almost one of those ones like we saw when Allsop first came in, where, you know, maybe you do keep Allsop in for now, but it's, you know, as soon as we lose or draw a game or concede a soft goal or something, like, you know, it's basically give him that chance and it's his shirt to lose, but almost just looking for a reason to bring Panda in might be the way to go. But I'm curious. I mean, it's hard with some of those players because we haven't actually seen Panda play. So I don't know how good he is with his feet, like what sort of keeper he is. There's always that sort of instinct that you want to see these new signings as soon as possible. But, I mean, it's also just worth giving him some time to bed in and get to know the team.
It's one of those situations where if he's not a player that's used to playing out from the back and he's used to booting it up, then I think he needs a couple of weeks playing with the team in training and getting used to that. But people will be the first to say, like the people that don't like Allsop and will look at every single time he's passed out and we've conceded, will be the first to say, get him out, put someone else in. Because I think you make one mistake as keeper and the entire world is on your back. Which is why you say it's probably the easiest position to change if you get pummeled maybe 2-3-0. Like the first thing you do is, all right, cool, we'll bring in the keeper that we sign and then see what happens then.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, well, then what's your score prediction for this one?
Yes, I said 3-1 to us. So 3-1 win. It was great to see a clean sheet, but I think Millwall have been pretty strong in scoring in their last few games. So I think that's probably a fair result.
And this is at home as well, so it'll be interesting to see how the pitch is held up and whether there's been much work done to fix that up after that pretty tough run of fixtures where it was getting chopped up quite a bit over the festive period. So hopefully it's in a good position to sort of manage through the game. I'm probably going to go with 2-0. I think Philogene back from the start will be really good to see. Yeah, look, it's an interesting one. It's a really difficult game to predict because there'll be so many new players and so many variables in how we line up and how we play the game out. I just like the fact that we've got options off the bench now so that we can change things up if things aren't going well. I take your point about Millwall being quite good recently with scoring goals. It's going to be an interesting one because it does seem as if either we go for it and we attack and we sacrifice a bit of that defensive grit, or we sit back and it's a bit more low scoring. But I think with Philogene back, if Giles starts as well, we'll have that attacking dominance to be able to sort of press Millwall and hopefully get a few goals on the board. I'd love to see, I think for me, the biggest thing this week would be to see Ohio get a goal. And we sort of talked in the chat, like if he can hit the ground running, even off the bench, I think that really sets us up for a strong run in. Whereas if he takes, you know, 3, 4, 5 games to get going, it becomes a bit of a, you know, what do we do up forward? Where do we change it? What do we have to do to sort of accommodate him? It becomes a much trickier situation.
I don't think I'm going to be that harsh to judge if in the first maybe 3 games he doesn't score, as long as there's some impact. Because I think it took Delap a little bit of time as well to really find his feet. And then, I mean, we saw what happened when he did. He got towards 6 goals pretty quickly, but it wasn't just the goals. It was, you know, the forward thinking, like he's always looking to take on the defense. He's really good with his feet. So I think I'm just excited to see what Ohio can bring to the team. I mean, you look at our left-hand side now, and we will have Philo in front of Giles, and that's a lot of like attacking threat between the two of them. So if Ohio just knows where to be, and he's got the team around him, so that I'm sure that he'll be able to read the match, he should be in positions where he can at least get a shot off or at least test the keeper. And if he's doing that, I'll be happy.
Yeah, and he's got the height and the strength so that when Giles is whipping those balls in, he should be able to get his head to some of those as well. So, in a lot of aspects, he's a very similar player to Delap. So It will be interesting to see how he gets off to a good start. Umer as well. I mean, like, obviously hasn't actually even signed yet, but even just seeing him for a bit in this game could be pretty exciting if we can kind of, I guess, get a sense of his capabilities and what he can produce for us. And of course, this unnamed winger, if it is a local player, as you're talking about with Giles, you know, he's been playing a lot in England. If it is, you know, one name we've seen floated around is Chris Willock at QPR. If it was to be him, for example, he's one who could potentially go straight into the lineup as well.
Yeah, or we can go for the complete shock and say we're signing Jack Clark.
Well, that's it. Yeah, you have no idea who it could be. So I think, look, we're in for a pretty exciting deadline day in that sense. So, yeah. You know, I think it closes at 10 a.m. our time or something like that. So, you know, from 7 a.m. or whatever, it'll be nice to be up watching that and tracking along that last-minute business. But, look, it's all back and, all, you know, it's exciting to have a game again this weekend. It's sort of been a quiet week without City last weekend, yeah. So it's good to be back.
I've had a few sleepful nights, so it'll be nice to have a sleepless night again.
Absolutely. Well, and especially because we've had a lot of Friday night games lately, so it's been a Saturday morning. So it'll be a bit unusual having the 2 a.m. Saturday night game. We'll have to, there we go. But look, thank you for joining me for this one, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
No worries, and thanks everyone for listening in. We'll be back next week to talk all things City and hopefully 3 points against Millwall. But until then, come on, City. You've been listening to the official Hull City Australia podcast, The Tigers Down Under. For more discussion, join us on Facebook at the Hull City AFC Australia Facebook group, or follow us on Twitter at Hull City AFC Oz. The music was created by Amber and Black. All the city's on fire, with a burning desire. Tigers are roaring, a destiny's calling, cause now is the time. Yeah, the city's on fire, going higher and higher. There's no turning back, 'cause you're out.